I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. This is Internet Marketing. Now, before we start today, we have a request. If you are really enjoying what we do here on the Internet Marketing Podcast, then if you could, please leave us a review on iTunes or your podcast app, of course. That would be fab. It really helps us to grow the podcast and ensure we bring you great marketing tips and advice each week. Right, today I'm joined by James Taylor, author, speaker, and international authority on creativity. James, how are you?
Wonderful. Very lovely to speak to you today as well.
Likewise, and thanks for coming on the show. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself, what you do. You do a lot, don't you?
Yes, I'm a little bit of a master of a couple of different things. So my background initially came from the music industry. I used to manage pop and rock artists. I managed bands like Deacon Blue from mm-hmm. the UK, and also worked with members of the Rolling Stones and lots of kind of Grammy Award winners. And then I got completely fed up, I'm originally from Scotland, so they have a word here, scunnered. I got completely scunnered, fed up with the music industry. And I made a transition around 2010. I moved to Silicon Valley to work in tech and online marketing. And that's then transitioned me into what I do now, which is kind of using some of those online marketing skills, but really helping people and helping organizations to become more creative through different products and different things I do.
Fantastic. Now, the title of today's show, it's actually quite a long title, but essentially it's The Creative Life, isn't it? Simple ways to boost your creativity, innovate in business and become a creative genius. So let's start off. Tell us about some of the common attributes of the culture in creative organizations right now.
Yeah, so I mean, it what's interesting, I mean, just to give people a little bit of a kind of go back at one step, I remember, you know, years ago, this was about 2008, 2009, actually listening to this show. And this is just kind of one point, it's like the power of podcasts, if nothing else. I was listening to this show. I was in the UK at that point working with all these music artists. And I just kind of got interested in online marketing and marketing more generally as well. Mm. And I said, I actually want to make a little bit of a change. So I ended up moving to Silicon Valley to work there. I got a call one day from one of the founding team at AOL asking me if I would come to Silicon Valley and work in helping build this company. We built it very, very fast and grew very, very fast with that company. And one of the things when I made that transition, moved to California, I got very interested around, I've always been working with creative individuals, but then being in San Francisco, you start seeing about being around creative organizations, which have a kind of slightly different thing. So I think that the first thing I would say about, you know, what kind of attributes of creative organizations is the philosopher Plato, he had this expression, what is valued in a place is cultivated there. And in Silicon Valley, they value creativity and they value innovation. And you can see that in just loads of different, like, little small things as well. Everything from not just like the physical environments in which you're in, but, you know, the way they give feedback. I can give listeners a couple of little tips around that as well. But the thing I'm really passionate about kind of creativity just now is we're kind of going through this phenomenal change in work where we're going from a time where people kind of did tasks, where we're now bringing in AI, robots, automation, and what the World Economic Forum says in the next 5 to 10 years, creativity will be the third most important job skill because robots will basically be taking a lot of those lower level jobs.
Yeah.
So I started kind of getting interested in this. I moved to Silicon Valley, started working, building these businesses. And I think, well, how does creativity actually kind of work? And as I started diving into it, what I found is that this idea of culture is very important. This expression where, you know, change the water, not the fish. If the fish is sick, you want to change the water first.
Yeah.
So probably the simplest thing that many organizations can do is focus on the culture of the organization first and then start working on individual kind of creative kind of skills and things. So I'll give you a classic example of this. In the Bay Area, just on the East Bay, there's a little company there called Pixar.
Yes.
Many of your listeners will know, like Toy Story and Brave and all these great movies. Now, the thing I find fascinating about Pixar in terms of how they do creativity as an organization is how they give feedback. And I think this works especially well whether you're working in a large engineering company or a marketing agency. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you notice is every morning they'll have their stand-ups or their version of their stand-up meetings where they'll look at the work from the previous day. How they give feedback, the way in which they give feedback is critical. So the first thing I would say is they ensure that when they give feedback, it's not too early in the process. Sometimes, especially in the germination of creative ideas, if you come in a little bit too early with, you know, this is not working, there's something wrong here, it can crush some of those early ideas.
Yeah.
But probably the bigger part is the way in which they give this feedback. They have high level of kind of specificity about what they say. So they say what is unclear or is wrong. So I'll give an example. Let's say they looked at the work from the previous day and they're looking at some of the slides from that day. But instead of saying, oh, that scene just doesn't work, you know, that's terrible, that scene, they'll say something like, in that scene, it lacks the pace of the previous scene because X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So just being a little bit more specific with your feedback is extremely powerful. And so very little small things like that can actually amount up to a lot because it just starts to create a culture as well. Another classic thing, probably every organization does this, is around brainstorming sessions. Mm-hmm. Brainstorming, first invented in the 1930s, BBDO created it. Great idea. Unfortunately, most companies do it totally wrong. I don't know if you've ever been in that experience of being in a brainstorming session where somehow it usually ends up with the guy with the whiteboard. It's usually a guy. Yeah. The guy with the whiteboard pen that dominates the board and all the ideas.
I have seen that, yes. Yes.
It's a horrible experience. And I think for a lot of – I work with a lot of engineers and software engineers. And, you know, a lot of those folks are quite introverted characters. And so brainstorming sessions, the way that they're often done, they just don't work. They're just not good. So, you know, kind of quick tip for some things that people just kind of take away in their own organizations is before you ever run any kind of brainstorming or ideation session, give everyone the problem in advance. Tell them what the problem is so they're not coming into the room like, okay, what are we here for again? So for a lot of introverted people, that allows them to kind of work on, think about, reflect on the problem before they come into the room. And then once they're in the room, everyone should have, you know, pens, you know, post-it notes. Everyone should be able to first go up onto the board, start putting their initial ideas, and then you start getting into the actual, the real depth of the brainstorming session itself. So you don't have that thing of one person dominating the board.
Post-it notes are so useful, aren't they? I've been in so many meetings because I'm a software engineer, and we have we have stand-ups like you mentioned. We have sprint planning meeting. A sprint is where you do like a 1 or 2 week section of work. And post-it notes are amazing, aren't they? They're a very nice way of preventing the syndrome that you just described, the alpha male at the whiteboard syndrome.
Exactly. And what I like about we use with our team, we use Trello and Slack. Most of our team are in the Philippines. So it allows and we all really value having the visual component, like an online version of the post-it notes. And we do the same thing, you know, agile in terms of how we do our project management as well. And so there's something kind of special if you can have those things visually, but if you give people the ability that no one can kind of dominate. And I think this is especially hard for, you know, alpha type characters.
Yeah.
You know, type A's.
Alpha type characters.
You want to get straight in, like, okay, this is what we do. This is the solution. And that can be lovely from an ego perspective, but it's actually not so good from a creative organization perspective. You want to come something, if you are that person, you want to sometimes can pull back a little bit, let others explore their ideas first.
Yeah.
And then by all means come in with your thoughts, but you can kind of quickly crush people and crush their ideas if you just kind of dominate the room in that way.
What I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, I mean, I'd like to talk about the sort of creative process generally, because I know that you've got a sort of a five-stage process, haven't you? Tell us about this sort of these sort of tried and tested techniques of being creative and this five-stage process.
Sure. And what's funny about this is I kind of talk through this five steps or stages, and it doesn't matter whether I'm speaking to content marketers in Boston or whether I'm speaking to, I recently spoke to judges and lawyers in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of talk through this, and you can see, oh, I can see how that fits in with what I do. So it's agnostic in terms of the industry. This is basically the way it works. Another thing I should preface it by is I'll describe it in a linear fashion, but in reality, it's iterative. You kind of go back and forth. So
yeah.
The first stage of this creative process is what we call the preparation stage. It's that stage where if you're working on a new project, creative project, you have to absorb as much information as possible about that. So, for example, I worked with a lot of musicians in the past. So they would listen to recordings by other musicians to get inspiration. Mm-hmm. If you're a visual artist, you'll go and go to galleries and look at works by other visual artists. If you're a writer, you'll read the works, or you'll go and go to a place and study the place that you're going to be writing about. If you're an entrepreneur, you'll look at funnels and marketing funnels and how other entrepreneurs are building their businesses as well. So that first stage of the creative process, that preparation stage, what we normally say is it's best done in kind of quieter kind of environments, or environments with maybe a little bit of low level noise, like coffee shops are fine as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point of that is not necessarily to come up with anything new and creative. The point is to absorb as much as possible. So for example, when I was speaking to lawyers the other day, for them in that stage, they're having to absorb all the casework related to that particular thing. So that's the first thing. You need to kind of just load up on information first.
Yeah.
The next stage, stage two, is what we call the incubation stage. This is the bit, what I find is a lot of people will try and jump from, you need to give yourself a little bit of a gap. We call it the incubation stage. Essentially what you want to do, if you're working on a project, give yourself, maybe switch to another project for a week or so. And what will happen is all that information that you've taken in, you put it to the back of your subconscious, but your brain's still working on it. It's just working on it in the background. It's kind of churning on that information. Mm. So you kind of have to kind of switch. So with my team, for example, we're in that stage. I'll have them focus on another project for maybe 2 weeks so they can just be thinking about it, reflecting in the background. Now, here's a funny little thing about this incubation stage and the next stage, the kind of insight stage, is we often think about these little, we call them creativity hacks, little things that can increase by a relatively small percentage of your levels of creativity.
Yeah.
Things like colors, caffeine. So I'll give an example. A University of British Columbia did a study, and they looked at which colors, if you have around you, will increase your levels of creativity.
Right.
What they found was actually if you have the color red around you, it actually increases your levels of accuracy. So if you're an accountant, bookkeeper, remember, the color red is a good color to have around you. If you put it around your screen, it actually increases your levels of accuracy.
Really?
The color blue, though,
yeah,
it will increase the number of ideas you have. Now, I'm talking about quantity and not necessarily quality, but they will increase the number of ideas. The University of Berlin, though, just did a study very recently, and actually it found that the color green, especially the vibrant kind of green that you get out in nature,
yeah,
is the best color to have around you when in terms of coming up with creative ideas. So it's often the reason why we'll sometimes get some of our best ideas when we're out walking in nature, because that color green is around. So very simple thing, get some plants, get some things, get that color green around you. Another useful thing to come up with insights is around caffeine. So high levels of caffeine, like coffee, is very effective at the preparation stage because you're cramming all the information, and it's also very effective at the last stage. But these middle stages, stage 2, 3, and 4, what the Martha Farrar is a neuroscience professor at University of Pennsylvania, she's shown that high levels of caffeine will actually reduce the number of creative insights that you have.
Really?
So at this stage, dial down the caffeine. Go to the herbal teas or water or something as well. So this is a very simple kind of thing. So I mentioned that incubation stage, but this stage 3, this is the bit that they make the movies about.
Yeah.
We call it the insight stage or the aha moment. You have that, or it just suddenly comes to you. Now, the way that you get the insight stages is because you've done that previous work as well. You've done those previous two stages. And actually, when it comes to creativity and innovation, it's actually the smallest part you know, it feels like it's a big thing, but actually it's actually the smallest part. But, you know, we kind of get that sensation, oh, it's only kind of just kind of come to you. But that's because you've been preloading your brain with information beforehand. And here's another little tip. You will be more likely to come up with insights in those aha moments when you're doing low level physical activity.
Yes.
So I'll give you an example. Like when you're out, you know, walking, out cycling, out, you know, doing stuff. Actually, bizarrely, you know, one of the reasons we get some of our best ideas in the shower in the morning.
Oh, that's me. That. Yeah, I get my best ideas in the shower. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the reasons we get that is a couple of things. One, you know, you're a bit more active at that time. But the other reason is because at that point in the morning, your brain is kind of unwound. You're not quite together yet. And importantly, you're open to unconventional thoughts.
Yeah.
So what's been going on is you've been thought about something the day before, the night before. You get up in the morning, your brain's kind of a little bit unwound. It's been kind of thinking about it overnight, though. You jump in the shower, you're kind of doing your hair, you're doing your thing. And then these kind of ideas seem like they're coming out of the blue. Now, for most creative people, I'm imagining actually most listeners, you know, to the show, the big challenges for them is not stage 1, 2, and 3. They're often people that work in the marketing and the creative agencies, for example, they don't have a big challenge around that. They're actually in the minority because if you look at worldwide, only 39% of people consider themselves creative. Mm. So like, that's probably, you know, for a lot of listeners here, that's a lot of those folks. But the vast majority of people do not consider themselves creative, which is insane. If you think about it, creative is going to be one of the most important skills. But for the people that do consider themselves to be creative in that way, then the next stage, stage 4, is the evaluation stage. And this is essentially where you say, which of these ideas is one worth pursuing?
Yeah.
This is tough because if you're coming up with lots of creative ideas all the time, then you're like, oh, okay, well, which one do I do? At this stage, this is where I think it comes into, we often talk about third place in creativity. So not your home and not your work. So if you go back to like the ancient Greeks, they had the symposiums. Symposium literally means to drink together. So it's a place you would go with your buddies, and you like throw around ideas. If you go to, for example, Vienna in the 1800s, 1900s, like Freud and all these people, they would get together in coffee shops and they would like just talk about ideas and things. You know, in Edinburgh during the Enlightenment, they had clubs. You know, every kind of, you know, they had the clubs and going to the ideas. So the evaluation stage, the important part there is getting feedback. Before you decide what to do, you kind of have to like say, you know, meet with some people, whether that's in a mastermind group or an association or group, say like, hey, listen, I've got this idea. What do you think about it? And I think what you have to do at that point is you have to do a little bit of triangulation where you get a couple of views. And then finally you have to kind of say, oh, okay, you know, that's great. I've got that information in. Now I'm going to make a decision as well. And that's, I mean, that evaluation stage is critical because you're getting all these kind of ideas. So you have to decide which ones are worth pursuing. And I think this is especially hard. And so I speak as someone who loves marketing, loves online marketing. Mm. And there's a real danger of the bright, shiny thing syndrome. You know, some new thing is this month is webinars. We're all taught to be using webinars. The month after that, it's going to be, you know, Instagram ads, you know, the month after that. So one of the challenges, I think, especially for this industry, you know, when I talk about marketing as an industry, is you're constantly having to decide, is this something I want to pursue? And having those people around you that can sometimes just say to you, actually, you haven't quite finished on the previous thing, creative project you're working on, maybe get that one done first. And then the final stage I was just going to mention, just to round up, is what we call the elaboration stage. And that's really where, you know, there's that expression, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. This is the 99% stuff.
Right.
This is where you create your minimum viable products, sprint, agile. That's where all that comes in. That's where you actually build out the thing, test it, tweak it, improve it, and then, you know, go back to the beginning and, you know, start again.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Now, the interesting thing about what you've, that five-step process that you just described, is it, to me, the real sort of analytical thinking didn't come until the evaluation stage. Have I got that right?
Yeah. So often what you want to try and do in the early stages is you want to hold back any kind of critical, necessarily critical thought. That really comes in, as you said, in that kind of evaluation stage where you have to decide. But in the early stages, you want to be very open to different ideas.
Yeah.
And actually, you want to probably try and go out of your comfort zone. It's a little thing you can do where, like, give yourself, okay, I'm going to come up with 10 ideas for this thing. Actually, I would say try and come up with 30. The first 10 will be relatively easy to do. Mm. The next 20, you know, the next 10 will be pretty tough. The last 10 will be insane. You know, but actually there might be things in those ideas that are worth pursuing.
Now, moving on from the creative process, I'm just wondering about teams. What about sort of leading and managing creative teams, James?
Yeah, so there's lots of things around that. I think a big trend that's happening, this is more an innovation side of things, is I'm seeing increasing number of organizations who are kind of splitting up the two roles, like very strongly defining between the CEO and the COO roles. Mm. So the CEO role is essentially there to go continually be looking and building new parts of business, innovating and pushing forward, even if it means, you know, cannibalizing the core business, which allows the CEO, COO, to be actually focusing on building, you know, the main business itself. So what I would say that, I mean, that's a different kind of innovation kind of management stuff. I would say when it comes to the probably the simplest thing people can do when it comes to how to manage creative teams is automate those tasks which, frankly, no human should be doing. Mm. I think you owe it to the people in your team. And my team's, you know, I've got a team in the Philippines, team here in the UK, and some stuff in the US as well. I would never delegate something to someone if I think I can automate it. And yeah. I think this is especially the case in marketing automation, for example. There are so many things you can just automate first. That then frees a huge capability of your people to actually work on the more higher level creative tasks, rather than just doing those same tasks in and out. So that's the first thing I would say, automate as much as possible that you can, then to allow your people to do the, you know, the creative side of things. And then I would say that the other thing around when you, especially when you're talking in teams, and I think this especially goes for creative agencies, is how to deal with burnout or block. And if you're every day you're having to produce, that is tough, you know, to do that. So I think you have to develop kind of strategies for yourself and for your team, so you don't have that. And that's part of that is ensuring everyone gets adequate rest in what they're doing. I also am a big proponent of having them do kind of like CPD or you know, continual professional development or continual creative development on things not directly related to their job.
Yes,
they need to be going out there getting fresh inspiration. That could be, you know, going on taking one of these amazing MOOC courses like Coursera or FutureLearn or something like that, going and learning something completely unrelated to their job, because, you know, the creativity is like a muscle in that sense. You know, in the morning, you know, you're kind of like you're working out all the time, but you do need time where you can just let it you can let things rest, and you can just be quite comfortable with a bit of ambiguity around what you're doing and not continually producing.
Now, I know you sometimes talk about the creative mindset in startups. So I was thinking, what about large, more established organizations? Tell us about how you should be sort of thinking and acting in terms of creativity in the way that a startup would, but in a more established organization.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously from the kind of Silicon Valley perspective, we all come out from, you know, minimum viable products. You're always thinking moving fast and breaking things. You know, you're continually doing that way. I think when it comes to in terms of the mindset of the people in an organization, there's a very subtle but a very important thing I think you should think about. One is, you know, if you go way back, the way that creativity was always thought about was that we were vessels for creative ideas. Mm. Those ideas may come from, you know, in way back, you know, the gods or higher power or the environment or the people around you, the teams that you were working with. And then that's how creativity was thought of. Now, the good thing about that is if your creative project didn't work out, it wasn't all your fault because it's complicated. But if, you know, and if it did work out, you couldn't take all the credit. That was a downside.
Yeah.
But then what happened is during the Enlightenment, a gentleman called Giorgio Vasari wrote a book called Lives of the Artists. And he said, no. Michelangelo and Da Vinci are the creative geniuses. The individual is the creative genius. By doing that one small thing, he created this idea of the lone creative genius myth. The idea is this individual. And we see it today. Just pick up any magazine, Fast Company, whatever magazine, you'll see that one individual there on the cover.
Yeah.
But really, if you think about it, where does creativity come? I would argue that creativity is a team sport. Mm. It's something that you do in a team context. And so the first thing I would say in terms of mindset of startups is really thinking of yourself as a team in that context, and don't feel it always has to be down. I mean, there's no such thing anymore as the creative department. We're not in the kind of 1950s Mad Men land anymore. Everyone in the team should be coming with their A game in terms of their creative, you know, abilities. So it's up to everyone to invest in those skills as well. So, but don't give yourself this whole thing. It like always has to come from me. I think there's a big difference when I speak to groups in the West, in the UK and the US, as opposed to speaking groups in Asia. In the West, we tend to think about creativity as this idea that things are created from nothing, has to be brand new. Now, that's because we come from a background where, you know, I'll bore you with history, but basically it's because we come from a Judeo-Christian background. We believe that the world was created from nothing, or many people believe the world was created from nothing, and it just kind of happened that way. Mm-hmm. In the East, you don't think about it. When I speak in the East, the way that creativity is thought about is, because they come from a Buddhist or a Confucius background, that really creativity is where you take two existing ideas and you bring them together into a new, a novel way. Now, if you think about it that way, and you think about your own creativity for yourself and your team, then it actually becomes a lot more fun, because it's like, what can I think about in my industry? And how can I kind of go out and think about maybe a completely different business or a completely different industry? And how can I apply it to what I'm doing as well?
Mm.
That's a small but pretty subtle change. But what it does is it takes that stress off of you, of having to continually think you have to come up with some brand new novel thing. And actually where the real value can come is where you can put just a really interesting slant on something because you borrowed something from a completely unrelated industry or business model and applied it to what you're doing.
So, James, if you had one top tip or key takeaway for our audience today, what would that be?
I would say, and this goes back to kind of like the 70s. So it's sometimes feels a little bit kind of woo-woo, but actually this stuff works. And I was speaking to the guy that writes all the music for the TV show Dexter the other day. Mm-hmm. And he uses this. And I know I speak to so many creative people. I was talking to someone from lynda.com the other day that does a big online learning company, and they use this. And it's something called morning pages.
Right.
And if you've never heard it before, basically it's this. It's you get yourself a journal. Every morning when you get up, when you sit there with your morning cup of tea, you know, before everything else is going, sit and write freehand, three pages freehand, top of mind, you know, just flow, just kind of get what's on your head.
Yeah.
No one else is ever going to see this. It's not a diary. It's just like getting stuff out of, you know, your head onto the page. Here's the value in that is, as I mentioned, your creativity is a little bit like a muscle. It needs to be stretched and worked out every day.
Yeah.
So by doing those morning pages, you just kind of get some of those ideas out of your head onto the page into some written. And then by all means, you can kind of go back through them and say, oh, actually, there's some commonalities there. I noticed, and I'm actually going to maybe create a project from that. But you have to kind of first start with getting those ideas out of the page. So always have with you either your Moleskine type notebook or an Evernote or something.
Yeah.
So you can be kind of capturing those ideas. But morning pages is a really, really powerful. Don't worry, no one's ever going to see them. It's just for you.
So it can be gobbledygook, because my mind is full of gobbledygook.
Yes, perfect. That's it. No one else is going to see it. But what you're doing there is, you know, it's like when someone learns improvisation. I come from a jazz music tradition. Now, if you ask someone to improvise, if you say, now improvise on this, and they've never improvised before, it's frightening, it's really frightening.
Yeah.
So actually, if instead you explain to them, actually, what I want you to do first is I want you to sing the thing first, then I want you to play the thing that you're singing as well. So by getting, by using singing as a, essentially a middle, it's a, it allows you to, it's a, like a bridge, allows you to cross over. So all the morning pages are, is it just allows you to get ideas out of your head into some form, some written form, and it's a bridge to then, you then maybe looking back at these things, actually, I'm going to make this into a project, or I'm going to take this one further, or that's completely insane, that idea, but there's something there, and I'm going to dig a little bit deeper.
Amazing. Now, I, what about this thing called boundary crossing? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this is a bit of a bizarre one. This is kind of coming relatively recently. I was interviewing for my own podcast, the Creative Life Podcast. I interviewed Dr. K.H. Kim, and she's a scientist in the States. And she looked at, is there a link between intelligence and creativity? Because it was always believed that there was a strong link between how intelligent someone was and how creative they were. It was called the threshold theory. It was believed that in order to be someone to be very creative, they had to have an IQ of over 120. Which is actually pretty high as an IQ level. So she looked into this and she actually found it was total nonsense, which just wasn't supported. So if you look at, if you look in North America, for example, you'll see that IQ levels are going up, but creativity levels have been going down since the 1990s. That's because of the education system, standardized testing. It's reducing levels of creativity, even though people are becoming more intelligent from an IQ perspective.
Yeah.
But then what she did as part of that study, she looked at the top Nobel, she looked at Nobel Prize winners, because these are scientists, writers who are considered the most creative, that we reward with Nobel Prizes. And what she found with those people is that they weren't necessarily the most intelligent people. They were intelligent, but they weren't like Mensa level often. But what they were very good at was boundary crossing, was taking one idea from one area and applying it to another. Mm-hmm. Like I just mentioned, you know, the Chinese way of thinking about creativity, where it's not a brand new thing, but you'll take two existing ideas and put them together.
Yes.
So so I think if you're thinking that, let's say if you're an expert in SEO, for example, and the thing that you love about SEO is the data, is the analytics side, I would argue that you should probably, in terms of continual development for yourself, is you should go and do stuff which are maybe humanities related, completely. Just go and study some other things. Go and study, you know, Greek philosophy or something else.
Yeah.
Because there will be things that you can apply from that. I mean, the classic example were things like in Shell years ago. There was one of the top engineers was trying to work out how to get more oil out of the seams in the North Sea.
Mm.
And one day he was sitting there with his son, and they were, I think, maybe at McDonald's or like a chain like that. And the little boy had one of, you know, those straws you have with the little bendy bits at the bottom?
I do, yes.
So he had that, and he was looking at, the engineer was looking, I thought, I wonder if I can make a drill, a pipe like that as well, a bendy pipe, so it can go down, but then it can also go across.
Yeah.
That one thing made that company billions of dollars. So it's that kind of, and that's a classic example of boundary crossing, where you take an idea from something unrelated, fast food, in yes. that case, to the oil industry. So, you know, read widely, go and get new inspiration. Don't go to the same conferences every time where you hear the same people talking about the same things. Go in and stretch yourself, push yourself. It will be uncomfortable at times, but from that you will get, you know, probably more ideas and more innovative and creative ideas.
That's inspired me now, that has, James, to sit in different coffee shops.
Yeah. In fact, there's one interesting app, and I don't know if any of you have used it. I had a guest on my show recently, and he told me about it, and I love this app. It's called Coffeetivity.
Yeah.
And basically, it plays the noise of a coffee shop on your computer. You can have it on your iPhone as well. There has been some studies showing that low-level sound like that actually does improve levels of kind of creative thought at certain stages. But I think, yeah, I'd get out there, go to a different coffee shop. Hemingway always said, Red Hemingway always said, always have three coffee shops, cafes. You have one that you eat in, one that you work in, and one that you socialize in. But never make those the same cafes.
How interesting.
Different activities there.
Well, James, thanks so much for coming on the show. Before we go, tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and all that you do.
Cheers, my pleasure coming on today. So you go to jamestaylor.me, and just go jamestaylor.me/free. I've got a free book on creativity. And if you go to jamestaylor.me/creativity-blueprint, I actually have a free video series. They can learn much more about dealing with creative blocks, like the creative process, and some of the most common questions I get asked about creativity.
Fantastic. And your Twitter handle, just tell us what that is.
Yeah, so it's JamesTaylor_me. So come and tweet me, come and say hello. That would be wonderful.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, James. And thanks to our listeners for listening. The show notes are in the usual place, and that would be sitevisibility.com/IM podcast. Please leave us a review if you're enjoying this show, because that will help us to do even better and get to even more people. If you want to drop us an email, it's podcast@sitevisibility.com. You can tweet us at Site Visibility. If you want to connect with me personally, I'm Dr. Pod, DocTorPod on LinkedIn and Twitter. And we have a Site Visibility group on LinkedIn, so you can join in the conversation there as well. So that's all from me, Andy, and it's all from James.
Goodbye, and wonderful speaking to you today, Andy. It's been a great pleasure being on the show. I've been a fan of for years.
Thanks, James, and we'll see you all again next time on Internet Marketing.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.